Welcome to Slaughterhouse Stories. I hope you enjoy the stories I have for you tonight. Hello, to all you things that go bump in the night. Hello to all you humans as well. Welcome to the show that brings you creepypastas, short scary stories, and dark horror-themed poetry from all across the world. This is the Slaughterhouse Stories Podcast, Episode 47, Wendigo, A Terrifying Story. I am your host and narrator, Ghost Train, telling you to lock your doors, get under your blanket, and keep the lights on. You can find the links to my socials in the show notes. Come and discuss all things spooky with me. And also, if you'd like to write in and have your email read on the show, email slaughterhousestoriespodcast@gmail.com with creepypasta requests, stories you've written, or your own real-life paranormal encounters. Before we get to tonight's first story, I'd like to ask you a favor. If you're enjoying the show, please head over and leave a review through iTunes and help spread the word to your friends, family, the creature trying to possess you, whomever. Tell them, be a listener, not a victim. Now, let's get spooky. To start us off tonight is one of the most well-known creepypastas out there, about a creature that finds you while you're sleeping, that speaks to you. With sightings that allegedly go as far back as 1691, make sure you're alone, make sure your doors and windows are locked, and make sure mine is the only voice you hear as you listen to The Rake. During the summer of 2003, events in the northeastern United States involving a strange human-like creature sparked brief local media interest before an apparent blackout was enacted. Little or no information was left intact, as most online and written accounts of the creature were mysteriously destroyed. Primarily focused in rural New York State, and once found in Idaho. Self-proclaimed witnesses told stories of their encounters with a creature of unknown origin. Emotions ranged from extremely traumatic levels of fright and discomfort to an almost childlike sense of playfulness and curiosity. While their published versions are no longer on record, the memories remained powerful. Several of the parties involved began looking for answers that year. In early 2006, the collaboration accumulated nearly two dozen documents dating back between the 12th century and present day, spanning four continents. In almost all cases, the stories were identical. I've been in contact with a member of this group and was able to get some excerpts from their upcoming book. A Suicide Note, 1964. As I prepare to take my life, I feel it necessary to assuage any guilt or pain I have introduced to this act. It is not the fault of anyone other than him. For once I awoke and felt his presence, and once I awoke and saw his form, once again I awoke and heard his voice and looked into his eyes. I cannot sleep without fear of what I might next awake to experience. I cannot ever wake. Goodbye. Found in the same wooden box were two empty envelopes addressed to William and Rose, and one loose personal letter with no envelope. Dearest Lenny, I have prayed for you. He spoke your name. A journal entry translated from Spanish, 1880. I have experienced the greatest terror. I have experienced the greatest terror. I have experienced the greatest terror. I see his eyes when I close mine. They are hollow, black. They saw me and pierced me. His wet hand. I will not sleep. His voice. A mariner's log, 1691. He came to me in my sleep. From the foot of my bed I felt a sensation. He took everything. We must return to England. We shall not return here again at the request of the Rake. From a witness, 2006. 3 years ago, I just returned from a trip from Niagara Falls with my family for the 4th of July. We were all very exhausted after a long day of driving, so my husband and I put the kids right to bed and called it a night. At about 4 a.m., I woke up thinking my husband had gotten up to use the restroom. I used the moment to steal back the sheets, only to wake him in the process. I apologized and told him I thought he got out of bed. When he turned to face me, he gasped and pulled his feet from the end of the bed so quickly his knee almost knocked me out of the bed. He then grabbed me and said nothing. After adjusting to the dark for half a second, I was able to see what caused the strange reaction. At the foot of the bed, sitting and facing away from us, there was what appeared to be a naked man or a large hairless dog of some sort. Its body position was disturbing and unnatural, as if it had been hit by a car or something. For some reason, I was not instantly frightened by it, but more concerned as to his condition. At this point, I was somewhat under the assumption that we were supposed to help him. My husband was peering over his arm and knee, tucked into the fetal position, occasionally glancing at me before returning to the creature. In a flurry of motion, the creature scrambled around the side of the bed, and then crawled quickly, in a flailing sort of motion, right along the bed, until it was less than a foot from my husband's face. The creature was completely silent for about 30 seconds, or probably closer to 5. It just seemed like a while. Just looking at my husband, the creature then placed its hand on its knee and ran into the hallway, leading to the kids' room. I screamed and ran for the light switch, planning to stop him before he hurt my children. When I got to the hallway, the light from the bedroom was enough to see it, crouching and hunched over, about 20 feet away. He turned around and looked directly at me, covered in blood. I flipped the switch on the wall and saw my daughter, Clara. The creature ran down the stairs while my husband and I rushed to help our daughter. She was very badly injured and spoke only once more in her short life. She said, "He is the rake." My husband drove his car into a lake that night while rushing our daughter to the hospital. They did not survive. Being a small town, news got around pretty quickly. The police were helpful at first, and the local newspaper took a lot of interest as well. However, the story was never published, and the local television news never followed up either. For several months, my son Justin and I stayed in a hotel near my parents' house. After we decided to return home, I began looking for answers myself. I eventually located a man in the next town who had a very similar story. We got in contact and began talking about our experiences. He knew of two other people in New York who had seen the creature we now refer to as the Rake. It took the four of us about 2 solid years of hunting on the internet and writing letters to come up with a small collection of what we believed to be accounts of the Rake. None of them gave any details, history, or follow-up. One journal had an entry involving the creature in its first 3 pages and never mentioned it again. A ship's log explained nothing of the encounter, saying only that they were told to leave by the Rake. That was the last entry in the log. There were, however, many instances where the creature's visit was one of a series of visits with the same person. Multiple people also mentioned being spoken to, my daughter included. This led us to wonder if the Rake had visited any of us before our last encounter. I set up a digital recorder near my bed and left it running all night, every night, for 2 weeks. I would tediously scan through the sounds of me rolling around in my bed each day when I woke up. By the end of the week, I was quite used to the occasional sound of sleep while blurring through the recording at 8 times the normal speed. This still took almost an hour every day. The 3rd week, I thought I heard something different. What I found was a shrill voice. It was the Rake. I can't listen to it long enough to even begin to transcribe it. I haven't let anyone listen to it yet. All I know is that I've heard it before, and I now believe that it spoke when it was sitting in front of my husband. I don't remember hearing anything at the time, but for some reason, the voice in the recorder immediately brings me back to that moment. The thoughts that must have gone through my daughter's head make me very upset. I have not seen the Rake since he ruined my life, but I know that he has been in my room while I slept. I know, and fear that one night, I'll wake up to see him, staring at me. The Rake can appear to anyone. Will it kill you? Maybe, maybe not. But one thing is for sure. Once the Rake has found you, your life will never be the same again, human. Are you sure you haven't heard it? Haven't seen it sitting at the foot of your bed? Maybe you will, tonight. While we wait for your visit, let me move us to the next story of the night. This one, about a teenage girl and her little brother, who get dragged to a campground that their father is doing a job at. Everything about this place was wrong. The surroundings, the atmosphere, everything. What happens at this campground? Does Jason appear? No, of course not. But relax, get some s'mores, and try to enjoy as you listen to The Chapel in the Woods. At times I wonder, why do my parents have to be such good people? I guess I got lucky to be born with such nice people who like helping others out. But even my dad realizes that half the time, he's being manipulated to do so. Even so, when one of my dad's friends wanted help with his camper, my dad instantly replied the positive. I wish he hadn't, now that I look back on it. Of course, my 3-year-old brother wanted to go too, but since my dad couldn't watch him this whole time, I got dragged along. I would have been just fine staying home, reading creepypasta, and talking to my boyfriend, but no. I had to go to babysit. It didn't help that my MP3 player kept randomly turning off. Then I saw the campground, Chapel in the Woods. When we drove in, it was possibly the creepiest place I'd ever been in. For one, it was way too quiet. Other than the wind, there was no noise. Two, it was autumn, but instead of nice pretty orange and red leaves, all the trees were bare, and just the branches were left, like a skeleton without any skin. And to top it all off, clouds covered the sky. Like, not pretty white fluffy clouds, but gray looming clouds of hell. But my dad had made a promise, and he intended to keep it. So we pulled up to the camper, and he told me and my little brother to go play, have some fun. Hell, if I had known what would happen, I would have just said fuck it and stayed in the car the whole time, no matter how much my little brother complained. But no. Instead, we made our way to the playground, and while I tried to get my MP3 to work, my little brother, whose name is Tim, climbed around the playground. Having no luck with my musical device, I stuffed it in my pocket and just watched him play. That's when I saw the first two people since I had entered the campground. Both were girls. The older one was around my age, 16 or 17, while the younger was 4 or 5. If I had been in a less sour mood, I would have realized something was wrong with the way they dressed. They wore white sundresses, no shoes, and it was only 40 degrees out. But no, my own anger and possible stupidity blinded me. The elder one whispered to her little sister, and she went to climb on the jungle gym. Sitting next to me, the older sister said, "Hello, I'm Brianna. I live here with my sister Teresa. Tell me, what is your name?" Holding it a hand, I replied, "Kate, aren't you cold?" After shaking it, Brianna shrugged. "I'm used to it," she said. I noticed that she did have goosebumps all up and down her pale skin. I just said, "Why don't you go back to your campsite and get a coat?" Brianna chuckled. "Like I said, I'm used to it. Would you like to help me braid my hair?" she asked. Raising an eyebrow, I said, "Sure. Got a hair tie?" Brianna nodded and pulled it off her wrist. Strange that I hadn't noticed it before. It was a dark green, and when I touched it, it was wet. Figuring she had wet it while washing her hands, I got behind her and began braiding the long black hair. Instantly, I realized it was wet too. What had this girl been doing? Take a dunk in the lake? I joked. Brianna didn't respond, and I just worked on braiding all the hair. Finally, when it was done, I scooted beside her and looked at my little brother. Tim was making a sandcastle in the dirt with Teresa, who was almost identical to Brianna in looks. "So, which campsite do you live in?" I asked, attempting to make conversation. Brianna didn't answer, and instead asked, "May I braid your hair in return?" I laughed that off. "It's too short." "I'll just make several little braids then," Brianna decided. Before I could object, she got to putting the braids in my hair. It happened too fast to be normal, but I was still surprised she did it. When I touched it, I could feel dozens of tiny braids within my fingers. Thanks. "No problem. I got an idea. How about we go to a lake and you can see your reflection?" "No thanks, we better get back to the camper anyway. Dad's probably ready to go," I said quickly, getting up and heading over to Tim. Tim and Teresa had made an excellent sandcastle. Teresa didn't say a word. She merely giggled and pointed at Tim. I pulled his hand and we began heading away. At this point, Brianna got desperate. "Please, please come to me, to the lake," she said, grabbing my free arm and starting to pull. I shoved her away, which was easier said than done. "I'll look in the mirror when I get home," I snapped. picking up my little brother and hurrying off. When I looked back, both Brianna and Teresa had vanished. The sandcastle was gone too, as if it had never been there. Luckily, Dad was ready to go, and we get out of the chapel in the woods. Oddly enough, my dad didn't question the dozens of little braids. On the way home, I asked Dad, "Hey, did your friend mention any campers that were here? Like a little girl and her sister?" My dad looked at me like I was crazy. "Kate, there are only around 10-year-old campers left. None of them have children." I glanced in the side mirror and my face went white. My hair was perfectly the same as I left it. I touched it, and still felt like dozens of little braids. After we got home, I took a long shower. I headed to my computer and Googled, "Teresa Brianna, Chapel in the Woods." What I got was a news article. 5 years ago, a father took his two daughters out on a camping trip. The girl's uncle came to find them and shot the father in the head. The daughters' bodies were recovered 3 days later. Apparently, they had been drowned in the lake and left for whatever scavengers to find. There was also a case of several drownings that had happened in the past 5 years. All the people that disappeared were teenage girls and their little siblings. I can still feel the little braids in my hair. The girls are lonely. Won't you stop by, braid their hair, and play with them by the lake? I mean, so many people already have, and they seemed fine. I'm sure you'd be fine too, human. Okay, so probably not, but still, go and play with them. And as you get closer and closer to the lake, let me give you this week's recommendation. This week, I want to recommend the book, Nightmare Land, by Lex Nover. The sleeping mind is a mysterious backdrop that science is just beginning to shed light on. It was only some 60 years ago that researchers discovered REM, the rapid eye movement cycle that's associated with dreams. In Nightmare Land, Lex, Lone Hood Nover, travels into the eerie borderlands where the unconscious, dreams, and strange entities intermingle under the cover of night, revealing wider and hidden aspects of ourselves, from the savage and frightening to the astounding and sublime. This book is filled with science and folklore and is sure to be a book you can come back to many times. So go wherever you pick up books and get Nightmare Land by Lex Nover. Now that I've given you this week's recommendation, let's take a trip down to open mic night at Beazle Pub. Welcome, fiends, to open mic night at Beazle Pub, where we invite you to sit right here and go into the more poetic side of fear. Poems of murder, creatures, and ghosts. All the things that scare you the most. The first poem tonight is another from the mind of Edgar Allan Poe, with a poem about death visiting upon a city. And the next one, written by Natalo, about someone out for a nice walk through the woods. But as is so often the case, it's so much more than a nice little walk. Ride the verses and love the rhymes. Lean back, relax, and enjoy The Doomed City and I Went Into the Woods Today. Lo, death reared himself a throne in a strange city all alone, far down within the dim west. And the good and the bad and the worst and the best have gone to their eternal rest. Their shrines and palaces and towers are not like anything of ours. Oh no, ours never loom to heaven with that ungodly gloom. Time-eaten towers that tremble not, around by lifting winds forgot, resignedly beneath the sky, the melancholy waters lie. A heaven that God doth not contemn, with stars is like a diadem. We liken Our Lady's eyes to them, but there, that everlasting pall, it would be mockery to call such dreariness a heaven at all. Yet though no holy rays come down on the long nighttime of that town, light from the lurid deep sea streams up the turret silently, up thrones, up long-forgotten bowers of sculptured ivy and stone flowers, up domes, up spires, up kingly halls, up fanes, up Babylon-like walls, up many a melancholy shrine whose entablatures intertwine the mask, the vial, and the vine. Their open temples, open graves, are on a level with the waves, but not the riches there that lie in each idol's diamond eye. Not the gaily jeweled dead tempt the waters from their bed. For no ripples curl, alas, along that wilderness of glass. No swellings hint that winds may be upon a far-off, happier sea. So blend the turrets and shadows there that all seem pendulous in air, while from the high towers of the town, death looks gigantically down. But lo, a stir is in the air. The wave, there is a ripple there. As if the towers had thrown aside in slightly sinking the dull tide. A vacuum in the filmy heaven. The waves have now a redder glow. The very hours are breathing low. And when, amid no earthly moans, down, down that town shall settle hence. Hell rising from a thousand thrones shall do it reverence, and death to some more happy clime shall give his undivided time. I went into the woods today, just for a pleasant stroll. No one was there to my dismay, not even one lone soul. I went into the woods today, the trees blocked out the light. For peace, 'twas a small price to pay, to lose the gift of sight. I went into the woods today, I felt a sense of dread, afraid of what I could not say, I could not go ahead. I went into the woods today, the shadows closing in, trapped in by convoluting gray, plaguing my pale skin. I went into the woods today, something moved up ahead, I quickly turned to back away, the path seemed to stop dead. I went into the woods today, I cannot see the end. How do I get out? Where? Which way? My vision starts to bend. Where am I going? I can't see. My courage is unfound. My conscious mind is flying free. My body meets the ground. The woods around me never end. A ceaseless sea of sepia, with some green and yellow and red. I feel sleepier. I feel something is dragging me. My back and bottom hurt. I dare not look upward and see whatever holds my shirt. I try to scream, help I declare, I try to wriggle free, but all the while far too scared to crane my neck and see. Now it lets go and I just run, my legs slower than time, but soon enough I'm caught and spun, as it extends its spine. It's 8 feet tall quite easily, its skin is black as night. It spreads its mouth wide, evilly, my body's full of fright. It stares down with its soulless eyes, and I can breathe no more. My parents filled me with their lies, no fiends behind this door. It grabs me with its skinny hand, again I'm being hauled. My lungs quickly shrink and expand, in fear of the beast tall. I went into the woods today, I found a pretty spot. And when I turned to walk away, I found that I could not. I went into the woods today, and then I heard a shout. That sounded quite like me, I say. I did not come back out. Death certainly did claim a throne that day. A city full of you humans that was chosen for destruction. Was it Atlantis? Was it Sodom or Gomorrah? Was it Philadelphia? Who knows for sure? And that poor person, out for a lovely walk, and then finds themselves stuck in a time loop. When will that end? Will it ever end? Maybe it's not a time loop. Maybe they are actually stuck in hell. But let's leave thoughts of time loops in hell behind. Leave the pub for the night, and get you humans back home for the last feature of the night. Tonight's feature that I call Indigenous Horror. One of the most well-known and terrifying myths humans have encountered, the Wendigo. This story finds Tyler and his friends enjoying a birthday party, not knowing at the time that this was the last time that this group would be happy and together. Don't speak its name. Stay safe. Keep everything locked up and listen to Wendigo, a terrifying story. It was my friend Caden's birthday party about a month ago, and I must say, it was pretty fun. My three friends, Enrique, Cody, Ian, and I went over to a party at his house. We went there on a Friday and stayed over for the night. We played video games, ate cake, and best of all, drank a crap ton of soda. The fun ensued until 3 o'clock in the morning, when his dad finally told us to lay down and fall asleep. We did the first thing, but not the second. We got some sleeping bags out and just talked for another hour or so. We joked around, talked about some stuff, and then the topic of the Wendigo came up. The Wendigo is a cannibal demon of Native American mythology that I wrote a short, scary story about in my creative writing class in school. I let my friends read the story the day before, and they said it was scary, but I figured they were more scared by the picture on the cover page than the actual story. The picture sure was frightening. It showed the portrait of a Wendigo, the skull head of a deer placed in a human-like bipedal body with long, narrow arms and fingers, and crouching long legs with hooves like a horse. The body looked like it was rotting away, as if the Wendigo was a corpse. It had blood dripping from its long, sharp teeth. Enrique loved the fact that the Wendigo scared Cody and Caden so much. He basically teased them in the black of night that it was coming to possess them, turning them into cannibalistic spirits. "Shut up," they would tell Enrique. "Seriously, shut up." "What? Are you scared?" he would taunt at them. I thought the entire thing was really funny, as of course there was no such thing as the Wendigo. But I could tell that they were getting even more afraid. Once, Caden looked at a window without the blinds over it, and thought that the Wendigo would stare at him through the window. He was too scared to actually get up and shut the blinds though, so I did. Enrique continued to tease them. He got out his laptop and googled images of the Wendigo. Then he went onto the Wikipedia page for the Wendigo. He read aloud, "All cultures in which the Wendigo myth appeared shared the same belief that human beings could turn into Wendigos if they ever resorted to cannibalism, or alternatively, became possessed by the demonic spirit of a Wendigo, often in a dream." "What's a demonic spirit?" Ian asked, watching the taunting unfold. Enrique googled it. He found out that a demonic spirit is like a ghost, except it can possess your body and have control over all of your actions. He also found out that if you say a demon's name out loud, you have summoned it. You have made it its duty to possess you. "Well, if that's true," Enrique said, "Wendigo, Wendigo, 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 Wendigo. Come get me, Wendigo." "Enrique, shut up," Cody and Caden said, both of them on the verge of throwing something at his face. I interjected, "You guys, the Wendigo is fake. Now shut up and go to sleep." "Whatever, I'm tired anyway," Enrique said as he yawned. And we fell asleep. The next morning I woke up and went to the bathroom. Nobody was up yet. I decided I would eat some cake from yesterday for breakfast. I went to the fridge and got some. As soon as I turned around, Enrique was up and was in my face. "Whoa, you scared me there," I said. No response. He just gave me a face, a chilling face. His eyes were sunken in, and he gave me a non-smiling, wide-eyed, pale look. I sat down at the table and ate the cake. Soon, Ian, Cody, and Caden got up. A few hours later, my mom picked me up and I went home. That night, I went to bed afraid of the Wendigo. I remember what Enrique said, and I became increasingly more and more frightened. Eventually, I gained enough confidence to finally just sit up in my bed and say, "It doesn't exist, so I'm going to say its name. Wendigo." A few seconds passed. "See, Tyler, there is no Wendigo," I told myself. Then I heard a scratching noise at my bedroom door. It started out barely audible, before it became louder and louder and louder. Oh God, what have I done? The scratching noise was so loud, I thought it was going to break down my door, whatever it was. Finally, I got out of my bed and approached my door. As I started walking towards it, the scratching got louder and louder. My hand, inches away from the knob, was hesitant to open the door. From the time my hand was inches away to when I finally opened the door felt like an eternity. I twisted the knob slowly and slammed the door open. I heard a barking noise, and I looked down and saw my bulldog, Fat Chops. Relieved, I let the dog into my room. On Monday, I returned to school. My school is a charter school that has a dress code, and on that particular day, I received a detention for forgetting to wear my belt. The next day I had soccer practice, so I knew I had to serve it that day. The day went on normally, but at 3 o'clock, I had to go to Mrs. Foster's room to serve my detention. I was the only one in the room with her. After a few minutes, she told me that she had to go somewhere really quick. Okay, I said. About a minute later, I saw Enrique outside the door, and he came in. What's up? I said, glad that he was there. He looked at me with the same pale face he had given me earlier, with his sunken-in eyes and neutral expression. Are you okay, dude? I said. No response. Hello? He got up and went into the corner of the room and just sat there. Enrique, I said, growing more uneasy. Enrique, I repeated. Enrique, dude, you are starting to scare me. All of a sudden, he put his face up at the ceiling and started to transform into a hideous, pale-skinned, jagged-toothed creature. Afraid, I started slowly moving backwards. He was possessed by the Wendigo. I broke the window in the classroom and ran out of there. Next to the school, there were some trees that I thought I could hide in. I ran possibly 100 feet to get into the trees. As soon as I got into the foliage, I hid behind a tree trunk that was wider than me. I was afraid to look back at the school, but slowly I turned my head backwards. I was hesitant too, but I wanted to see if he was still following me. As soon as my eyes were facing the school, I was face to face with the demon. I ran further into the trees. They were covering up the sun, so it got darker. The air was very humid, yet cool breezes came by. Eventually, I think I lost him. It felt like I'd been running from the demon for hours. Sure enough, I looked at my watch, and it was already 7 o'clock. Even though I'd lost my pursuer, I still bit my fingernails in terror. Finally, I got out of the forest. The trees led me to a road, lit with one streetlight. The road only had a few houses on it. I started walking down the road, looking down. When I raised my head, I saw, under the streetlight, my bulldog, Fat Chops. I ran to her and started petting her. Who's a good girl? You are. Yes, you are. I said in a baby voice. What are you doing down here, Fat Chops? Huh? What are you doing? She started whimpering. I looked behind me, thinking that maybe she was whimpering because of something out of my field of vision. I was hesitant to look back, but I slowly turned my head and saw nothing. Oh, it's okay, girl, I reassured her. I started walking down the road as Fat Chops followed. And as I started getting further away from the streetlight, it got darker and darker. Eventually, I saw another streetlight. Still, I kept on walking and saw another light further down. Finally, I passed 5 of these posts. And underneath the light, looked at the time on my watch. It was 9 o'clock. I'd been on that road for 2 hours. I started running, in a hurry, and looked behind me. Fat Chops was nowhere to be seen. So I started running back, looking for my dog. Fat Chops, I would call out. Fat Chops. As I went under another streetlight, I looked at my watch. It was 12 o'clock. That seemingly short period of time was 3 hours. I went up to the light pole and saw a missing poster. From me. Passing the streetlights, I looked at the house in front of it. It looked exactly like the houses I saw before. Dazed, I started running as fast as I could. I got to the next streetlight, checked the time, and saw that it was 1 in the morning. Even though it had felt like 5 seconds had passed. I ran further, and eventually the streetlights came closer and closer together. I looked down at my watch. Each minute passed in a fraction of a second. Finally, my clock read 3 a.m. and stopped. It was the devil's hour. Suddenly, I tripped on something and fell in the street. As I regained my footing, and saw a pair of very tall legs. As I looked up, I suddenly connected to a skeleton-like body, with long arms and slender fingers. And on top of that body, the skull-like head of a deer.
Come here,
it said in a raspy, devilish voice. My body froze, and it started coming closer and closer and closer. It was right in my face. But then I regained my muscle movement. I fell back to the pavement, closed my eyes, and just hoped I would make it out alive. As soon as I opened them, it was morning, and I walked back to my house, and my mom sure was happy to see me. Tyler, we missed you so much. Where have you been? She said as I walked in. It was hard to tell the story about what happened, so I didn't. Do you know where Enrique is? He's been missing too, she told me. I simply nodded sideways. They never did find Enrique. Nobody knows what happened to him, but I do. The Wendigo hasn't quit either. At night, I constantly hear a whispering in my ear. My window gets knocked on. I have nightmares about it. But before it can possess me in my dreams, I always wake up. I always fight for my body. Well, I'm not going to fight for it tonight. The Wendigo can have me. I'm done. The Wendigo claims another human life, and all because yet again, a human doesn't know not to fuck around with things he doesn't understand. When they say don't use its name, then you don't use its name. Yes, I know I used his name, but I'm already a ghost, so we're on the same team. It's fine, we're in the same union. But now, I believe it is enough scares for this week. I hope you will join me again next week for more stories that are sure to keep you afraid during the day, and awake at night. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed the stories that I had for you tonight. And until next time.
Stay spooky.